A65. Number 17A.
Yes, we have seen this very powerful and comforting law of life, truth, and love. And we can ask ourselves in which way this affects really the practice and the whole attitude in practice when we take this law. Actually, you can see now why on the level of Absolute Christian Science we have the law of spontaneity and not the law of cause and effect. Because you can see that everything comes straight, vertically down, so to say, from God that says, let there be. It has no prerequisites for a demonstration, for salvation. Quite on the contrary, if we see that law, then we get into that state of grace where we really feel that we are working under grace and no more by the works of the law, because then we are not digging back into the past and ask ourselves, where did I go wrong? What did I go wrong? What was wrong in the past? What was wrong with my parents, with my ancestry? What is wrong with, unconscious and subconscious belief, with archetypal beliefs? All that past is then of no factor anymore. If everything comes vertically right down from God, the whole past is eliminated. And that gives us naturally the terrific freedom that we say the past is no factor anymore, therefore there can be no penalty either. We are not living under penalty. We only have a sense of penalty when we believe in the past, and that the past has an effect on the present. So, can you see what happens on this level? Man is free. Man is every moment free. He's every moment an absolute new creature. Yeah. Which one is true? Creature. Yeah. A new being. Without any past. Think of it. Can we walk around in this universe without having a feel that we are burdened by the past? This is a terrific claim on each one, on the mortal. That is that which is the outcome of the past, of past mistakes, of past happenings, of past ancestries, and so on, and so on, and so on. So we don't need to believe in reincarnation. Well, who have I been in earlier centuries and in the time past and all that thing? That just is out, because we are every day new, right from God. So, this brings us also to another aspect, namely that if we have the law of spontaneity, we have that sense that we do not need to improve anything, to improve the mortal, to improve the human state of things, but that it will be improved by the impact of the law of life, truth, and love. So that whole sense, you see, that we feel we have to go and save the world, that we have to save ourselves, that we have to save the family, that we have to save our business, to save, all that is something which we are concerned with on the level of Christian Science. But once we have seen through that whole claim of a world, by seeing that the world is actually nothing but the compound of mortal mind, matter, sense testimony, and if we have seen through that mind, spirit, soul, then we are at the point where we see there is no improvement. There is no improvement. There is only the perfection of being. We do not go out for an improvement. Going out for an improvement means that we go that we accept first imperfection, because only imperfection can be improved. Perfection cannot be improved. So the whole sense that we have to save the world, to improve the world, and all that is going out from a dualistic sense. Whereas in absolute Christian Science, you really see that we always go out from perfection and that there is no problem of improvement. Isn't that a freedom that comes on us? Another point that we see, if we see that actually it is life, truth and love that is operating, then we know that this life, truth and love is the only true practitioner. If we consider practice, and consider practice and a practitioner, patient, sickness and so on, that is involved in a practice, that there is a practitioner, that there is a patient, and that there is a case. But if we are working on the level of absolute Christian Science, we also have an absolute sense of what seems to be a practitioner. And so we see, the only practitioner actually is life, truth and love. Because that alone gives a treatment. That alone has an impelling power to do something, to bring out perfection. Yeah. Well, this may be more or less the most important point that we feel when we are contemplating this law. So we go to the next one in Absolute Christian Science, to the Christ, and consider in the Christ the law that is ruling there, and we have seen there that Mrs. Eddy uses that combination of truth, life, love, very often, and with that she means the Christ activity on the level of absolute Christian Science. Again, we have to remind ourselves that this is a chord and not a sequence, though naturally we first think it out from truth to life to love, but must see it as a chord, as one compound of those three synonymous terms, with the accent now on truth, no more on life. The accent is now on the first one, on truth. So it's actually truth, life, love. It's the Christ, truth, life, love. It takes its authority really from the level above, where we had in Divine Science as the Christ truth, the one truth. Now, translated to the point of specific ideas, which is the level of absolute Christian Science, naturally we must see that one truth, that one whole truth of Divine Science, if that truth should be individualized, a specific truth, that naturally needs life, because life individualizes. Shows how that one truth is individualizing itself as infinite truths. So life has that function here of taking the one truth and individualizing it into infinite specific truths. And we could say, that should be enough, truth and life, because if the office of life is actually to translate the whole to the specifics, it has achieved that truth, the one truth, is specified through individuality. Why should there be love? Now, this is very clear, because also in mathematics we do the same. We say, yes, there is one mathematics, or one, let's at least say, one arithmetic, not many arithmetics, that's the one truth, and we know that this one arithmetic contains all the calculations within the realm of mathematics. See, that arithmetic is infinitely individualized as calculations within that field of arithmetic. But along with that, we cannot solve problems, because we don't know which one of the infinite truths or calculations have to be used in a specific case. So if we have learned in the first grade the whole numeration table and know very well 5 times 5 is 25, 6 times 6 is 36, 7 times 7 is 49, we know the whole numeration table, but then the teacher comes and says, now look here, I give you an example or an assignment, work out this and this assignment, what do you call it when you give a calculation, huh? You know, a problem, huh? Well, the thing is that the pupil must know which one out of that whole numeration table is that one that applies to that problem that has been stated by the teacher. So if the problem is 5 times 5, he cannot say, well, I know that 12 and 7 is 19. That's true, but it's not the answer. So a truth by itself is never the answer. That is the point that stirs most Christian scientists, that if you tell them that the truth by itself is never true, or does not need to be true, because 12 and 7 equal 19 is true, but it's not the scientific truth, because it's not the answer to the question, to the problem stated, what is 5 times 5. So a truth is only then a scientific truth when that truth is seen rightly within the whole framework of arithmetic. So it is with science. That's why we need a further element that says, now which is that truth that is adapted to the solution, which actually solves. So love is the universal solvent. So love must come in and say, I am that element or that nature in being which can pick out of all those truths that which is saving, which is solving the problem. We have that love is the infinite adaptability, that love is the consummation of it. Only love can really solve the problem or consummate the problem. That's why John Dolly, when he presented for the first time that law of truth, life and love in Mark, when he took the Gospel of Mark and showed that the Gospel of Mark is always brought out from the standpoint of truth, life and love, he would call the truth the ideal truth, then life the expression of that ideal, and then love the consummation of that ideal. Today we can perhaps even more clearly specify those three synonymous terms and say, well, the truth is that one truth as the ideal truth. Life individualizes that ideal to the point of individualized ideal ideas, huh? But then we see that love has come in and say that love is that infinite adaption to a situation which adapts now the problem to the specific truth, and then we have a solution. So I like also to look at truth, life and love as really the one truth, infinitely individualized as infinite truths through life, and love adapting each truth in the whole design of love. and says, well, like in the mosaic, that every stone, every specific idea, every stone has its right place in that mosaic. It must be put there where it belongs to, not just anywhere. The stone remains the same stone, no matter in which place it is, but it doesn't give a picture. Only when it's in the right place, finally, it gives a picture of a pattern, a real plan, and that is necessary. Wonderful. Can you see that adapted to our everyday life, we first establish really the law of the word, of life, truth, and love, and see, yes, there is a practitioner at work in the universe. That practitioner is God, the divine principle that says, I am life, truth, and love. So I know he is at work. And at that point we may think, oh, that's wonderful. And then comes usually the but. See, every new category is answering a but. And then we say, but will God know my specific needs? Will God work that way that it gives the answer to my specific problem? Or is God just working out something universally and it really doesn't touch my problem? Other students say, yes, but how can God know all the problems and all the specific problems in the world? There are at least 4 billion people, and each one has a million problems. It's getting a bit too much, even for God Almighty. See, they begin to calculate, because in their mentality is something that negates the very fact that truth is individualized, but is of the nature of love, that it knows what to solve. Love. So we get rid of that by that fear that our specific problem may not be solved, that the activity of the one truth may not touch our need, and therefore we have to correct that within us. And by consciously building up the naturalness of the law of truth, life, and love. An absolute naturalness, which says it's absolutely natural in the nature of being that the one truth that includes all truth, life, it includes all truth, but also is aware of the specific solution that is necessary, love. And it gives us a sense that we are loved by God, that we are cared by God, that we are not forgotten by God, that we are not estranged from God, estranged from the activity of the divine principle. So we build up that. Yeah, I think this is one of the big points. Also, when thinking about this law of truth, life, and love, you can also say, or I say to myself, I also say to myself, now, truth, life, and love does not stand alone as a law. It's actually the second side of a city, therefore it's linked up with the first side of the city. It's therefore linked up by the law of the world as life, truth, and love. What does it mean? It means that if I take the law of the Christ as truth, life, and love, I say to myself, what kind of truth is actually here involved? And I can say it's actually the truth of the word, because it's linked up with the word. Therefore, it is also answering the question that the word does not stand alone, so that you get the feeling when we are working in the word and said, well, we can establish in consciousness that beautiful hum that constantly goes on, where in being there is ever at work that law which says, I am the life, I impel all ideas, I am the impelling urge for all ideas, and what I bring forth are true ideas, and they are already right at the source, complete. And then something comes in and says, but, does that apply to me? Can you see the translation from God to man? Does that apply to me? I ask the question of the Christ now, so that I can say, yes, it applies to me, because this word of life, truth, and love is in the Christ the truth. So you get as the truth, life and love, that truth as a, so to say, as a compound symbol for the whole law of the word as life, truth, and love. Can you feel with me? That you say, well, it's not just any old big truth that is working as truth, life, and love. It's actually the truth of the word. So I, at that point, you see, I begin to accept within myself that the law of the word of life, truth, and love is actually that which is constantly translating itself to me. That is constantly individualized. It's individualized, that Son of God is individualized in me to be the Son of God with a small s, Son of God, and therefore always at the point of complete consummation, love. So at that point I have accepted the Christ translation. Yes. What else could we see about this whole thing if we apply it, say, to practice? We have said that life, truth, and love is, so to say, the real practitioner. See, isn't it wonderful to think of the practitioner not as a person? Though we like that person, so we think very much of that practitioner, we trust in that practitioner, and we feel it has a high ideal and standard, but still think of it to think that life, truth, and love is the practitioner. And that practitioner never goes to bed. He's always on the job, huh? Always on the job, always conscious, always right at work. And that practitioner gives constantly a treatment. Well, what is a treatment? A treatment is the translation of the ideal of God down to the point of an individual situation. It's translation. So I begin to see that there is actually one big treatment going on, and that treatment is given by that big practitioner of life, truth, and love. So that truth, life, and love becomes the treatment. And that frees us from the fact, or from the belief, I hope that the practitioner does his work, I hope he can see the truth about the situation, I hope that he finds out what is wrong about me. Can you see, if we relieve the fact of a treatment from a person and put it right back into God, then we have a terrific sense that that treatment is constantly going on and is absolutely individualized through life and adapted to the situation. So my buts and whys and wherefores and doubts and fears disappear, because then I know that truth is treating me. Yes. That's the Christ in absolute Christian Science. I don't think there is anything else that is right of great importance. So in a way, if we would like to find a term for that law,
We may call it, you see, the law of individualization. It isn't really the law of translation. You remember last year we could see that the law of translation is actually the Christ in on the level of Christian Science, because there the law of translation translates God to man plus retranslates matter back into mind. That's the whole law of translation. Here, where you only have the translation from God to man, it is the law of individualization. It makes the one truth individual. So I guess we could call it here the law of individualization or the law of specification, to make it specific. Would that be a right term, specification, for saying it makes something specific? I think in this way we could bring out really the purpose of this law. And it touches our heart because we feel, everyone can feel, I'm cared for, I'm consciously cared for. Because that one truth is actually God's consciousness of himself, and as it is the whole consciousness, it says through life, that whole consciousness is constantly individualized as true individual consciousness, and therefore it gives us a sense that individual consciousness is actually individualized to the point where it cares consciously for me, where it knows me consciously and not is asleep of it or does not know it. So that thought that God may not know my needs or may not care for my needs is corrected. Yes.